Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. .org. Ah, well, let's see what's going on. We've got, in December, I'll be teaching a class in Writing as a Spiritual Practice at East West Books in Seattle, in the Ravenna District. It's like a three-week class, December 3rd, 10th, and 17th, only $20. You can stop by if you want to get into the spiritual side of writing and how it is used as a spiritual practice. And also, at the end of January, last week in January, I'm going to be co-teaching a writing retreat in sunny Zihuatanejo, Mexico. So if you want to get away from the rain and the cold and get into a little sun and writing in your creative life, come down and join us. You can find information about that on williamknauer.com. And of course, if you're ever looking for a little dose of inspiration to keep by your bedside to remind you why writing is worth it, why life is worth it, pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion, available where all fine books are sold. So, funny, I met today's guest, the lovely Jillian Cantor, when I was hosting a panel at the University Bookstore in Seattle, Washington. The panel was hosted by the Women's National Book Association. I was moderating it, and Jillian was one of the participants. And she told a funny story about how she writes for both adults and young adults, teens. And she talked about how, I hope I get this story right, how when she talks to her either teen readers or maybe reviewers or interviewers of her teen books, they want to know how it is she can manage to write for adults. But when she talks to adult readers or reviewers or interviewers for her adult books, they want to know how it is she can write for teens. And of course, she can do all these things, but it just goes to show the nature of the relationship between reader and author. It's a very private one. Sometimes to learn that your author has a life beyond the little book that you so love, a little bit like finding out your parents had a life before you were born. But they did, and she does, and now she's here with me now to talk about that whole life of hers. Jillian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome, or thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. So let's start with that. It's true. You know, I hope I got that story right, but you know, your life as a writer is divided somewhat in terms of your audience, in terms of mm-hmm. having some books devoted for teens and some for adults.
Right.
But is there really, in your mind, that much of a divide?
You know, in my mind, there isn't that much of a divide. And I think what I said is that when I see sometimes I see reviews of my adult books and people will say, well, she's a young adult writer. This should
That's
be more geared towards teens.
Yeah.
And then when I see reviews of my teen books, people will say, well, she's an adult writer. Maybe this book was really geared for
right.
teens. So to me, I don't see that much difference. I mean, I feel like I just like writing a character that I'm emotionally connected to, whether that character is 16 or whether that character is 35. It all kind of feels the same to me in the process. And I think as a reader, I like reading stories that are about 16-year-olds, and I like reading stories that are about, you know, 50-year-olds. So I don't know that there's as much difference as we might think.
Well, it's like we've created this difference in the last 15 years or so by really
right.
breaking up, by creating this really solid genre we call young adult and now new adult, of course, the newest
right.
in the subgenres of. And I don't think, I mean, it didn't exist when I was a young man. It
yeah,
was
I don't think
books.
It existed when I was younger either, so.
Yeah. And so, but that's a newer development. But, okay, so you write for teens, although I'm sure I know a lot of young adult authors, and they all, especially if their protagonists are, say, 16 or older, have
right.
fairly sizable adult readership of their, quote, teen books. Is that the case for you?
I think so. I do. And I think that I've had teen readers I've heard from who have read Margot. So I think I definitely get the crossover there with both sets of my books.
Well, so let's talk about Margot. So I met you, like I said in my intro, because I was moderating a panel that was hosted by the Women's National Book Association, and your inclusion on that panel was somewhat of an honor because they go through a ton of books that are published every year, and they pick about two dozen, I think about 20 to 24, that they select as book club books. And Margot was selected.
It was amazing to be selected for that. It was a really big honor.
And but it's an unusual, I don't know, it's unusual, but you reimagined the life of Anne Frank's sister. Was it her younger sister or her older sister?
Her older
Which
sister.
Was it? Her older sister.
Her older.
And you've reimagined
older
her life in post-war America. And so I know it's kind of hard to answer these things, but can you remember where that interest, where it began for you that you thought this is a story that Jillian can tell?
You know, I actually can remember that.
Okay.
The first time I read Anne Frank's diary, you know, I was 13, probably like most of us are. And what I took from it years later is I just really remembered connecting to Anne. You know, I felt like I was, when I first read it, I was about the same age she was. I wanted to be a writer. I was Jewish, and I had this connection to her. And when I picked up her diary, probably about 20 years later, I was in my early 30s, I read it again, and I noticed Margot, and I did not remember her from my earlier reading really at all. You know, I had this vague notion there were other people in the annex, but I did not remember that she had an older sister. So I tried to do a little bit of research about her. I learned that really nothing has been written about her, but I did learn that she also kept a diary in the annex, and that's true, only hers was never found after the war. So in reality, I grew up the older of two sisters, very much like Margot and Anne. I realized similar age differences, similar personalities. From the little I could learn about Margot, I kind of came to realize I was really nothing like Anne. I was much more like Margot. And so I felt compelled to give her a voice.
Interesting. And so then you had to decide what that voice was. Because she's just a fictional character at this point, based very loosely. I mean, how did you cope with the voice? Did you try to, how did you do it? I mean, where did you go for that? Because there is a historical person that exists.
Right. There was a historical person that existed. You know, her diary was never found, so we don't know what was written in it. There's very little that's ever been written about her. So I had some small tidbits of factual information about her personality. But my story takes place in 1959, which would be about 15 years after she died. And my character has come to the United States. She's taken on a new identity. She pretends not to be Jewish. So essentially my version of Margot Frank, who goes by the name Margie Franklin, is completely fictional. So in that way, I felt some freedom to write about her. I wanted to take what I knew about her personality and use that, but I also felt my version of this fictional character would be 15 years removed from anything we would know. She would have gone through this trauma, so I felt like I had a little bit of leeway to come to the voice on my own.
Yeah. And, of course, 1959 is a very particular time in American history. It's really a cusp time where we're getting ready to move from one view of ourselves to another, I think.
Right.
Were you interested in that time, or did you have to go back and really learn about it and find something interesting about it? What was your relationship to that kind of historical stretch?
Yeah, I did have to learn a lot about it. I really didn't know too much. But the reason I picked 1959 is because that's the year that Anne's diary was made into a movie, a Hollywood version of the movie, and the movie came out. And so I thought it would be really interesting to place Margot in America at this time when this movie came out. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding the movie. It was sort of a Hollywoodized, you know, version of what happened. And that was why I picked that year. like you said, it kind of was a time on the cusp. I knew nothing about it when I started, so I ended up having to do a lot of research about it. But the timing of the movie kind of dictated what time I picked.
You know, I mean, Margot obviously is the older sister of. She plays such a small role. You know, and by the way, I've never read the Diary of Anne Frank. Can you believe that? It's one of these things.
Oh, you
things
didn't
that,
read it in school?
I didn't. It never. No. So I, whatever. Maybe I will someday.
Well, you have to read
yet.
It. You need to read it. Yeah.
I know. I didn't read Etcher in the Rye until I was 43.
Oh wow! I read that in school too.
You know why I didn't read it? Everyone was reading it, but you know why I didn't read it? Because everybody told me I should. And I said,
oh,
no.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So I'm one of those. Yeah, right? Anyway, but back on track. I never read it, but obviously Margot played such a small role that the first time you read it, she didn't even register on you. But
right.
Anne Frank, obviously, is somewhat sacred ground for a lot of people. And,
right.
And so as you've gone out with this book and since it's been published, have you met with some of that sense of, hallowed ground, or have people been pretty accepting of your version of events, the fictionalized version of events afterwards?
You know, people have been overwhelmingly accepting, but I do get asked this question everywhere I go, because people are curious, I think, to know the answer. But then everyone I've talked to who's read the book has really felt that, you know, it was well done, or they weren't upset by it. At least I haven't talked to anyone that was. But I think when I was writing it, it didn't even occur to me at the time that, you know, maybe I shouldn't do it. Maybe it was sacred ground. It just kind of felt like it was a story that was very personal to me. It was a story that I had to tell. I never thought about anyone else reading it. I didn't know if the book was going to sell. You know, I wrote it. I wasn't under contract with a publisher or anything like that. So it didn't even occur to me. And of course, you know, after it got into the publishing world a bit and some editors sort of commented on it, I thought, oh, yeah, maybe people are going to be upset about this. But so far, everyone who has read the book has been overwhelmingly accepting.
God, you know, it's so good that you had that attitude. The worst thing a writer can do while she's trying to write a book is to sit there biting her nails over what theoretical reading world will think about it, because you don't even know. Thank
right.
God you had that blissful
ignorance.
Well,
I just thought, you know, the book I had written before Margot, I had worked on it for years and revised it, and it almost sold a lot of times, but it didn't ever end up selling. So when I wrote Margot, I just thought, well, probably no one's ever going to read this. This book's just for me. So I wrote what I wanted to write, and yeah.
That's awesome. Now, I didn't – maybe you said that at the panel, but that's interesting because Margot is your fifth published book. You've had three teen and two adults, correct?
Yeah, it's actually my fourth published book.
Oh, okay. Well, I
miscounted. And one other adult book.
Okay, so it's your fourth published book. So mm-hmm. you had published three, and then you weren't able to sell what the fourth that you wrote. You weren't able to sell that
right.
one.
Right, exactly.
That must have been tough. And you were kind of thinking maybe this is it. Weren't you after that? Weren't you dabbling with the idea of just chucking it? Or was that not even in the cards for you?
Yeah, you know, I kept saying that I was, but then I would sit down and I would write anyway because I couldn't stop myself, and I think that's why most writers write, because they have to. So, when I came to Margot, I just thought, you know what, this is going to be a book I'm going to write because I want to write it and I want to read her story, and I didn't really think about anything else at the time.
So, that book that you weren't able to sell, do you feel that you were writing it maybe, was there some difference to how you approached that, to how you approached Margot? Did you not have as authentic a curiosity about it, do you think?
Yeah, I think that was probably true. And I think I got to the point where I had revised it so many times and I had worked with different people and I wasn't even sure why I was writing the story anymore or what it meant to me.
Yeah.
And so I just felt if I was going to write something else, it had to be something that I wanted to write and I wanted to read.
Boy, it's such a common story. The worst thing you can do is you lose track of, and you're starting to write the book just so you can have someone say, you know, and I've known people who, like yourself, are already have a publishing track, but they get into that, and all they want is just to finish the damn thing and have some editor say yes, so they can just get on with their life and their career. But that's a a very hard way to finish a book.
Yes. Yeah, I think it would suck all the fun out of it for me.
Yeah. Well, you got to get connected. Well, that's great. And now that you've, now having written Margot, are you sort of resolved that, that this is the way you're going to work from now on, or do you feel you're always maybe having to keep your balance and find that authentic connection each time in a fresh way?
Well, I'm actually working on my next book now, which I did already sell to Riverhead, to my editor, who's really great. And it's actually been amazing to work with her kind of early on and have her in on the process. So it's different than the way I wrote Margot, but I'm really enjoying this as well.
What's so great about having her in early on the process?
Well, it's nice to have someone to bounce ideas off of and ask questions to and sort of collaborate with, I think, early on.
Yeah. What kind of questions do you ask her? Because this can be tricky with a writer with writing because she could have her ideas, you know, and then they can get into your head. So what kind of stuff do you ask her?
You know, just her opinion on things, and I really trust her opinion. She's a really, really smart editor, and she came to Margot, obviously, later in the process because she bought it after it was written and revised several times. But, you know, sometimes asking a question early on about something I'm not sure about might save me some time down the road in revision.
That's great. So what's the, like, when you're writing, what's, do you find there's certain aspects of writing a book that always hang you up more than others? Like maybe
I think starting. Starting the book always hangs me up. Yeah, I go to do it, I think, I can't do this. You know, every single time I sit down and I think, how did I ever do this before? I can't do this. And so it's getting that additional maybe 50 to 100 pages and knowing that there's a story there and knowing that I can follow through with it is always the hardest part for me.
You're daunted by that blank. See, I know a lot of writers where the starting is easy. Oh, they picture how great it's going to be and they've got this idea and it's all so fresh and then they get into it and they're like, oh, that's right, it's complicated. I can't. But it's the starting that gets you off. Oh, boy. So what do you do? How do you get yourself to start? What is it you say to Jill to get her through that?
Well, I think it's just the idea. You know, I have a lot of ideas of things that I could write, but I have to make sure it's the right one, and then I'm fully committed to it, I think. So I think that's what I mean by starting, too. It's knowing what I'm going to write about and who the characters are going to be and just realizing whether or not it could be a book.
Do you outline it all, or do you just dive in?
I don't really outline. The book I'm writing now, I have it sort of outlined. It takes place over about 7 years, so I have this big whiteboard on my wall where I have each year with, you know, like points of historical things that happened that I want to make sure get into the book. But no, I wish I could outline and I could just sit down and write from the outline because I feel like that would be so easy. But I've tried to do it before, and I find myself getting really bored when I outline. A lot of times I feel like what keeps me going in a first draft is that I'm not 100% sure what's going to happen at the end. And so I have to keep writing to find out.
That's right. You see, if you're not an outliner, if you are an outliner, you better outline or you're going to flounder. But if you're not an outliner, which, by the way, in my very loose kind of survey I've done of all the writers I've talked to, I would say 70% of writers don't really outline. They do kind of maybe a little bit, but mostly they don't. It's the rarer author that really outlines. So you're in the majority, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I don't know if you, but it's true. But you got to not do it because the creative process is what it is. And that discovery, I mean, that would be what it is for me. Is that what it is for you too? That sense of discovery and
it is.
Following
I mean,
your nose?
I don't remember who said this, but I read this somewhere. Somebody said that writing a book is like reading a book, only much slower. And I feel like that's true for me. It's that same satisfaction you get from reading this really good book where you don't know what's going to happen at the end. And I feel that in my writing process. And it's going to take me 6 months to a year to get to that ending, but I get really involved in the same sort of way,
so you
I guess.
Don't, So you don't have, sometimes I know people who don't outline, but they have a real ending in mind, but you don't even have an ending in your head?
I have a vague sense of where I want things to end up, but I'm not exactly sure how they're going to get there.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have like an emotional destination for the protagonist, maybe?
Yeah, well, I will say for Margot, and I don't think this is giving too much away if people haven't read it, but I knew when I started the book, I didn't know what was going to happen to her, but I knew she was going to take her sweater off at the end of the book, and that was my goal for her for the book, that she was going to take off her sweater, which sounds stupid, but, I mean, that really was her emotional arc and growth throughout the book, and so I was like, okay, when I get to the end of the book, she's taking her sweater off, and I didn't know why, and I didn't know how she was going to get there, but that was how I started with that book.
But you see, this is the way, life is so metaphorical, writing is so metaphorical in that to you, you had to have known emotionally what it means to do that for her, like what it would feel like, how that would be freedom for her if that's what it means.
Right. I just didn't know how she was going to get to that point from where I started her.
Right. But that's the fun part.
That is the fun part.
Is learning who your characters are. And isn't that always funny? I mean, maybe our listeners, a lot of them are writers probably, but some of them aren't. Maybe they're just your fans. That they'll hear writers say, I got to find out who that character is. I got to learn who they are. Almost like you're going to a party and meeting somebody. But then, even though it's coming out of you, theoretically, but that's really how it is, isn't it? As if you've gone to meet someone, even though you're writing.
It is. And sometimes it takes you a really long time to figure out who they are and what secrets they're hiding. But that's the fun part, I think, too.
Why do you think it takes longer with some than others? Do you think that, why do you think it's so? Because I know, you know how that is. Sometimes characters show up like talking to you and they're like formed. And other times you've got to root around and root around. What do you think the difference is? Any theories?
Well, you know, I think that even if I think I know a character perfectly at first and everything has come to me, I'll find out later on that I really didn't. So I don't know that they ever come to me fully formed. Even if I think, wow, this is going to be really easy. I know this person. I know what's going to happen. It never ends up that way. There's always bumps in the road and things that I learn in the writing process that I hadn't anticipated.
Yeah.
But I think that's
part
of the process.
Right now,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead. That's part of the process.
Oh, I was just if these people just sort of dropped into my head fully formed instantly and I could just sit down and write them with no problems, then what would the challenge be?
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think I was going to say, actually, that it reminds me. So right now an author, the lead interview, I got three new interviews up for the November issue, and I did another conversation with Andre Debuse III, the son of Andre Debuse II. Yes. But Andre.
Right.
And so I've interviewed three times now, and he quoted Sarah Orne Jewett, who said, I think she was the one who first said, write what you know. But she said, we write to learn what it is we know. I think I'm quoting that. But yeah, write to learn.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. I like that quote. I'm going to have to use that in another interview, and then I won't remember who said it or where I heard it. But
Sarah Orne Jewett. That was
okay, I'm going to write it down.
He likes to quote her. Okay, wait a minute. I want to get, if my computer, come on. Oh, my God. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to get my computer has, oh, there it is. Jeffrey Pretty is on the line, and I want to, Jeffrey, is that you? Do you want to ask a question?
Thanks so much for taking the call, and I know the bug. I know I'm on Windows 8, so I'll leave it at that. You have a wonderful question you ask your guests often, and I'm going to steal your thunder and ask that question, if I may, to your guests. That is, in the proper context, being a writer, what has being a writer taught you about yourself, about your life, about the business of writing? And thanks again for taking my call, Bill.
Oh, of course, Jeffrey, yes. Yeah, what has writing taught you? Writing's taught you something.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Bill asked me this in Seattle, and I think he stumped me then, and so now I'm trying to remember what I said. I think it's taught me to be just open to new experiences, and I think this is what I might have said in Seattle, too. As a I'm kind of a not resistant to change. You know, I like things the way I like them in my life. I just moved, and it was just like very traumatic experience for me. But I think as a writer, and especially doing historical fiction, I've sort of learned to think about other ways of living and think about other possibilities. And I think that this has been true. You know, you said how does that carry over into publishing as well, but I just think that being a writer has opened me up to so many new experiences. I think that I was in 14 cities this fall to talk about Margot, and like I said, I'm not really open to change. I'm not really a great traveler either. So it was really just sort of, I just had to kind of sit back and experience everything and think about the world in different ways, I think.
That's great. You know, and isn't it nice to get to go out. I published a book in the spring, and I went to places I haven't been in a while, or never been, actually, even in just Washington State, because I'm such a homebody. But it got me to go out and talk to people.
Right.
But isn't it nice to go and see the world, but through the venue, or see different towns, but through the venue of this thing that you've created and you really want to share with the world? I think it's such a lovely way to go out and meet these theoretical strangers, but that you have this thing in common with it, which is this thing that you've written.
Right. Yeah. No. It was amazing to be able to do it. I mean, even now I've been home for I think a week and a half, and it's already feels sort of surreal and like it was a big blur because I was in so many places. But it was really amazing.
Well, so okay. So what's on tap for you right now, Jillian? You're finishing up your next adult book. Is that right?
Right, yep. I'm finishing up the first draft of my next adult book. And I have my next young adult book coming out in May, which is called Searching for Sky. So that will be out May 13th.
Wow. So do you alternate at adult, young adult, adult, young adult, one year after the other? How do you do it?
That is what I did these last two times. But, I mean, we'll see how it works out. That's what I hope to do. I like to, not so much the difference between young adult and adult, which you asked about in the beginning, but my adult stuff has been historical, so I need to do more research. I feel like I really need to sort of delve in, and it requires a lot of thought. And then I feel like my young adult feels lighter to me as a writer just because I'm not researching as much. So I like that switch in between, that kind of change.
Yeah. Is that a nice welcome change when you don't have to go learn about, maybe, I don't know, do you like learning about new places and times?
I do. I actually really thought that I wouldn't. I resisted writing historical fiction for a long time. I wasn't really excited about history in school, but I found that when I start writing about these characters and these times that I'm interested in, I actually really like doing the research. So I really love doing that.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's nice to take a break after and do something else and then come back to it again.
Well, listen, Jill, best of luck. I hope the adult book wraps up as beautifully as Margot did, and I hope what's the teen book coming out again? Searching for Sky.
Searching for Sky.
It's a lovely title. What? So that's due out in May. May wherever books are sold. Okay, well, good luck with that and all your other books. Thanks for coming on the show, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Well, everybody, look. New Worlds. You know what? For New Worlds, you know where you can find your New Worlds? Right inside yourself. It's true. You go in, find what you're interested in, find what you love, and you will be astounded how finding that will lead you to new places. It's true. Sometimes it'll lead you to new stories. Sometimes it'll lead you to new cities. Sometimes it'll lead you to new friends, but it will lead you because love has a direction. Yes, it does. So, as always, write what you love, read what you love who you love. You can't go wrong.